Are the days of partisan gridlock in Washington a thing of the past? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Thursday, November 8th. House Speaker John Boehner called for compromise as the nation approaches the so-called fiscal cliff. And we will talk about whether that's possible or not with our guest in this half hour. And we'll welcome your thoughts and questions, too. Do you expect more gridlock ahead or less? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Stephen Smith, professor of political science and director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, is this for real? Is House Speaker John Boehner really ready to compromise?
You know, I think he probably is, but I'm not sure that his party conference in the House is. And, you know, that was the problem back in 2011. It looked like Speaker Boehner and President Obama would come to some grand bargain, maybe totaling about $4 trillion in deficit reduction as a part of the increase in the debt limit back in July and August of 2011. There are varying versions of this, but certainly one version is that Boehner wouldn't have been allowed to go that far because it would have included some revenue increases that his caucus wouldn't have tolerated. So the willingness to talk and to compromise, I think, is there on the part of the top leaders, but their ability to compromise is another matter.
Did the election results send a message to House Republicans in particular, or not?
Well, you know, I think it probably did, but that doesn't mean that those who manage to get themselves reelected will change their attitudes. I mean, they will, after all, say that their policy positions were reconfirmed by their reelection to the House. So this is really a question of whether or not there's a larger lesson for the Republican Party, having lost maybe a handful of seats in the House and surprisingly, two or three seats in the Senate, and, of course, the White House, whether there's some larger lesson. I doubt if they learn that lesson. I think that they will say that the country's deeply divided. It remains deeply divided. The election merely reconfirmed that. And we need to stick to our guns. Now, they do face a serious crisis because of the expiration of tax cuts and the imposition of pretty deep spending cuts that are coming up here on January 1. And so this will, you know, force them to address these issues again. But the path to a solution to the problem really isn't obvious.
Well, I'll talk a little bit more about the fiscal cliff in a
sure.
moment, but we heard John Boehner at his news conference yesterday saying that, you know, compromise, bipartisanship does not mean that you are compromising on your values or principles, that you can find common ground, and there are things that Democrats and Republicans can agree on in this area. Do you see any areas of common ground?
Well, the wordsmanship here is something to behold.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be very careful. Back in 2011, we know now from very authoritative second-hand accounts, there was a lot of talk about passing something that represented areas of agreement. And that turned out to be only on the spending side and almost entirely on domestic discretionary spending. Democrats would agree that some of that domestic discretionary spending should be trimmed. And so there was common ground in that narrow sense. But the Democrats didn't want that those discretionary domestic cuts to go stand by themselves. They wanted defense to be included. They wanted some tax hikes for the wealthy to be included. And so while they could agree on some areas that would be a part of a package, without the agreement on the overall package, no one was really willing to sign off on anything. And that's what killed a grand bargain back a year and 3 months ago. And I don't think they've moved any farther on those core principles since then.
Yeah, and I I also read that Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell yesterday weighed in on compromise and bipartisanship and gridlock, and he said, hey, President Obama, send the House something that the House will pass, and we'll take a look at it.
Right. So, you know, what we're seeing here is an effort in the immediate aftermath of the election to assign responsibility and the burden for making the first move on a compromise. And, you know, what we heard from the Republican leadership yesterday was that, you know, essentially they were not willing to make that move, that it's the president's responsibility. What they're doing is taking advantage of the fact that the American people expect a president to lead. But they're also, I think, it's fair to say, ducking the responsibility as elected congressional leaders to stick their neck out and offer, you know, viable bargaining positions. So far we've seen from the congressional Republican leadership nothing, and it'll be interesting to see how the president chooses to move forward here.
Now, John Boehner did say, apparently, that the GOP might accept new revenues through an overhaul of the tax code as a way to deal with, you know, reducing the deficit. Is that new?
No. And again, the language is important. What Boehner advocates is generating some new revenues by virtue of tax reform. That is, closing some tax loopholes, reducing deductions and credits, and simplifying, cleaning up the tax code. That would generate more revenue without increasing tax rates on anyone. And that's the bottom line for the Republicans, has been their unwillingness to deal with tax rates. The problem, of course, is that if you are also committed to reducing tax rates and you want to pay for that by tax reform, that is cleaning up deductions and credits of various kinds, then it's not clear that you get a net increase in revenue, and the burden of deficit reduction still remains on the spending side. So it's not clear to anyone, I think even to the Republicans, just how much they're willing to accept in the way of increased, on net, increased revenues from taxes. And so far, all we know is that they want to reform the tax code. They think they can get some revenues out of it. But at the same time, they have advocated reducing rates as a part of the package.
But maybe because so many signed a pledge that said, I will not raise taxes, that the president's call for raising taxes on the wealthy doesn't stand a chance.
Well, this is maybe part of Boehner's solution. He knows that many of his colleagues in the House have signed a no-tax pledge, which, you know, for many of them is certainly primarily a tax rate question. So if they can, through tax simplification, cleaning up the code, increase revenues, then maybe a net increase in revenues is possible.
I see.
That's kind of hinting, he's kind of hinting in that direction, but hardly anyone thinks that there is a lot of money in tax reform without substantially changing the deductions that are important to the middle class. And that's where the rubber hits the road here. Who's going to pay? And until there's some detail on what tax reform means, cleaning up the code really means, I don't think, you know, too many people are going to think that it's a serious offer at this point.
We have many callers, and I want to get to them right away on this issue of gridlock or no gridlock.
Sure.
But I wanted to ask you about how serious you view this this so-called fiscal cliff.
It's very serious. You know, the CBO has estimated that if we continue the tax and spending policies of this year in through next year, then we'll have modest growth, maybe in the neighborhood of 2%, more or less a continuation of the slow recovery that we've had over the last two or three years. But if we fail to act and allow these tax cuts to disappear and the sequestration on spending side to be imposed, we're likely to have a double-dip recession. We'll be taking so much money out of the economy in the way of tax increases and spending cuts that it'll cause a double-dip recession and cause maybe as much as a 1% increase in unemployment over calendar 2013. That's pretty serious stuff.
Yeah. And can it be? Can that cliff be delayed in any way?
Well, sure. You know, there's always a way to muddle through. There's no reason why Congress couldn't come back and tomorrow pass essentially a six-month or a one-year extension of the policies that are set to expire. And many people would think, maybe many economists would think that's a good idea because this wouldn't be a great time to mess around with fiscal policy and then address the longer-term debt problem over the course of the next year. There will be many members of Congress on both sides who will say that's just delaying the inevitable. Let's face up and get this done right now. I think that's the president's attitude, but if they can't come to an agreement, there's always a short-term solution.
Talking with Stephen Smith, a professor of political science and director of the Wiedebaum Center for Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis, about the fiscal cliff and whether or not we are going to see more cooperation between Republicans and Democrats in Washington, or maybe more specifically between President Obama and Congress. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking the weather forecast for today, it's going to turn into a mostly sunny, mild day today with highs in the 40s and 50s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 8, we will talk with the author of Faithiest, How an Atheist Found Common Ground with the Religious, coming up in our next hour. Our first caller for Stephen Smith, a professor of political science at Washington University in St. Louis, is Duane in Wausau. Hi, Duane.
Well, hi. Good morning. Again, your guest made a lot of great points. What I noticed yesterday when Boehner spoke, he did say, you know, we need to have serious entitlement reform, and we need the president to lead on this. And it was so telling that he did not, you know, they'll put it all on the president when it's something that might not poll good, you know, to make the tough choices, you know, and you're not hearing the tough choices out of their mouth, like specifics, just like during the campaign, there was those specifics. But my point, my main point was, like, when President Obama was elected, was it with Mitch McConnell or Boehner, said, our goal as Republican Party is to make you a number one, a one-term president. And to me, that was just writing on the wall as far as, okay, we're not going to make him look successful, you know, in his first term. Because if you, I had 30 managers over the course of 30 years working at this one place, and you felt bad if the manager wasn't successful. You did your best for him to make him look good. And if you had a guy you didn't like, you know, you didn't feel quite as bad as if he was, you know, didn't do well or made your department look good. And
Thanks, Duane. And what about that, Professor Smith? Now that President Obama is in his second and final term, shouldn't it be different?
Well, it might be. He's certainly freed of the burden of doing things that are popular and looking forward to a re-election bid. But of course, Congress is filled with politicians who are looking for re-election, including many in his own party. And so the electoral forces remain, you know, alive and well. There's no doubt about that. I think Duane touches on some important considerations here. One, of course, is that Mitch McConnell did say that his number one goal was to make President Obama a one-term president, and he failed to do that. And more than that, it looks like the Democrats have picked up two additional seats on net in the Senate. And so McConnell's hand in the Senate is even weaker than it was before. But keep in mind that it takes 60 votes to invoke cloture, to close debate and overcome a filibuster. And so the Republicans in the Senate are going to be faced with, you know, some difficult tactical decisions here. Do they want to maximize their influence by threatening to filibuster everything that's done here, including on the fiscal cliff? Or are they going to be a little bit more pliable? And we don't know yet. I wasn't particularly persuaded by his comments yesterday that McConnell is eager to negotiate. He seems to be taking a wait-and-see attitude, and I think the ball really is in the courts of Boehner and Obama. And if they can come to an agreement on something, then I think the Senate Republicans would have a hard time saying no. So I think the dynamic here is for Obama and Boehner to go back to the negotiating table where they were for weeks back in the early summer of 2011 and pick up where they left off and see if they can't come to some agreement on a package that includes additional revenues, entitlement reform, and long-term cuts in discretionary spending.
Online on USA Today, it says, so far, President Obama has nothing on today's public schedule, but we expect to hear from him today on the so-called fiscal cliff to respond to what Speaker Boehner had to say yesterday. You're advising him, Professor Smith. What should the president do?
Well, I think Boehner and Obama, maybe with a few others, need to be in private discussions about how they can put together a package. This business of having one side or the other show their hand in public and then take an awful lot of criticism for conceding too much to the other side before the other side has even indicated a willingness to compromise on anything is the basic problem, and it's unrealistic. Our best bet is that Boehner and Obama get together and start up these discussions. You know, they made a lot of progress back in 2011. They have a framework so they're not starting from scratch. But the essential ingredients are kind of obvious. The Republicans need to bend on taxes, and the Democrats need to bend on entitlements. And it's not clear that either side is willing to do that in the interest of the long-term solution to the deficit problem.
Let's take another call from Sheree in Waupun. Hi, Sheree.
Good morning. I want to apologize for my voice ahead of time because it's a little hoarse. But I wanted to say that, you know, it was very interesting watching John Boehner yesterday because I kind of got the impression that, okay, we had the election. Now it really is time to compromise. They saw that, you know, the Tea Partiers, you know, in Congress saw that, you know, standing in the way wasn't helping. And I really thought that the right wing would say, okay, now we know we need to work on compromise. And instead, when I watched Fox News, the first thing they said was, we didn't run somebody far enough to the right. And it scared me a little bit. And I said, well, let's wait for John Boehner. And then John Boehner turned around and is still trying to do the same thing. It feels like you're fighting with a two-year-old over a cookie. I really don't understand why compromise is so difficult for the right wing. I don't understand that.
Now, Professor Smith?
Well, you know, the way I see it is that both parties would like to see a long-term deficit a solution in place. But they have both parties have a higher order priority. For the Republicans, it's low taxes and shrinking the size of government. And for the Democrats, it's preserving social programs and keeping the federal government capable of addressing society's needs. So there's at least a lip service on both sides to deficit reduction, but they have different visions of the future. The Democrats would like to have the budget balanced, but at a higher level of revenue and spending than the Republicans want, and neither is willing to give in to the other side just to get a balanced budget. The only way they can do this is to compromise, they can compromise for the long term, like a 10-year plan, or the short term, a 1 or a 2-year plan, and I think it's a lot easier to compromise over the short-term plans than the long-term plans. So, ultimately, I think they'll probably undo some of the sequestration and reinstate some of the tax cuts, but do it for a shorter period of time. We have another burden here, and that is that in the next couple of months, the debt limit will have to be increased again. And the last time this happened, of course, in 2011, the Republicans refused to do it, and until there was a compromise on a long-term deficit plan. Well, they punted, and that's what got us into the position we're into today. And it's an open question whether or not, come January or February, when that debt limit becomes an issue again, as to whether the Republicans will choose to play hardball. And so we have a series of challenges, and my guess is that negotiating in public, as Boehner started to do yesterday, really will not work. That it will take a closed door, behind closed doors kind of negotiations to make any progress here.
Let me get in this one quick email from Jane, who says, it seems compromise to Democrats and their supporters in the media is Republicans caving in to what Democrats want. Rarely is compromise demanded from the Democratic side of the aisle and the White House. We have less than a minute, Professor Smith. Your thoughts on that?
Well, that's a bunch of bunk. The fact is, both sides are demanding significant concessions from the other side. And so far, neither one is willing to make the concessions required by the other side. So we have this stalemate. That's what got us into this position, and we're still there. The Republicans still control the House. They have to pass any legislation. The president can veto anything, and the Senate is still controlled by the Democrats. So there's no path here except compromise on the part of both sides.
Tell us we're going to be okay.
Well, I think we will, because I don't think anyone really wants to be blamed in the end for creating a new economic crisis. But it's not exactly clear, and that's the nature of this kind of bargaining, how we get from here to there.
Well, great. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll talk with Stephen Smith again, professor of political science at Washington University in St. Louis. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Rob Ferret, and to Amanda Magnus for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.